This is a special edition of the Online Success Journey podcast. During these challenging times during the COVID-19 crisis, we're bringing you fresh and relevant ideas and information to help your business. Welcome to the Online Success Journey podcast, your opportunity to discover and learn from entrepreneurs like yourself. This is not your typical podcast, but a place where you can get the real story and find out how real people encounter speed bumps and detours, but journey through to find success. Now here's your host for the Online Success Journey podcast, Patience.
Hello everyone and welcome to Online Success Journey. This is episode 250. Today we have Tom King, a self-confessed serial entrepreneur. While his favorite book list contains many success-oriented and personal development classics, the traditional definition of achieving success, for example, making a lot of money, is not what inspires or motivates him. Hello, Tom.
How are you, Patience? Thank you so much for having me on your podcast. And I'm very excited to dig in and see what questions you have for me.
Thank you for coming. I know the client here is anxious to hear your story. So let's get started with the basics. Can you tell my client a little bit about your background, about what you did before you started your own online business?
Well, I've actually done a lot of things. So, you know, I was just reflecting on this week that I feel like I've lived a thousand lifetimes. So, you know, I was actually raised in Colorado, in the US, and I was raised on a small working ranch. And you know, that's where I learned to take care of animals. And I also learned that that's not what I wanted to do. So I always felt like I wanted to, you know, get into some sort of a marketing or journalism, a situation. So I went to school and studied journalism and found that maybe that wasn't really what I wanted to do either. So I moved to Arizona to basically sort of find myself. And that's where I stumbled upon this gentleman whose name was Jim May. And Jim May had just come back from Paraguay, from the jungles of Paraguay, and had, you know, bags of different types of herbs and compounds that he'd brought back from these foreign countries. And he, you know, he asked me to try one of them. And I tried one, and it was really sweet. Like, I ate this green paste out of a jar that came out of the jungle, and it was very, very sweet. And I asked him what it was, and he said those were stevia leaves. And at that point, that is when something went off in my head. And it's like, you know what, there has to be a way to naturally release those sweet constituents out of those leaves, you know, and use that as some sort of a sweetener. And so I really threw myself into finding how, you know, to get those sweet parts out of the leaf. And 4 years later, I was able to find a company that could extract that into a powder. And that was sort of the genesis of my sweetener business called Steviva Brands. And, you know, Steviva Brands was is still a very successful consumer brand. But my whole goal was to actually build consumer brand equity with the Steviva Brands and be able to parlay that consumer brand equity into an ingredient company. And that is what I did in 2008. We launched Steviva Ingredients, which we have subsequently changed the name to Icon Foods. And, you know, now we are one of the largest suppliers of alternative natural sweeteners in the United States. And we also are one of the largest suppliers of no added sugar inclusions like chocolate chips for ice cream, cookies, and bars.
You launched your business 2008, and that time it was also a crisis like what we are facing right now. How did you do that?
It was tough. I struggled. I mean, I really, really struggled. You know, when I first started the company, the FDA, you know, the U.S. Food and Drug Administration, wouldn't approve stevia as a sweetener. You could only sell it as a dietary supplement. So it was a pretty big struggle for me. And I probably in 2009, I was pretty much out of money. Like I didn't have any money left. And I had to actually make a call to my dad, which was really hard because my relationship with my father was rather complicated. You know, he wanted me to, you know, run his construction company and, you know, follow in his footsteps, but, you know, I wanted independence. So there was always a little bit of friction. So when my business started to run out of money and, you know, I was in jeopardy of losing my house, I actually had to pick up the phone and make a call to my dad and, you know, throw myself on his mercy and ask for a loan. And so I was surprised that he didn't respond negatively. He actually responded positively and he said, sure, I'd like to help you out. So he gave me a small loan of $175,000, which got the business to the point to where it could start being more profitable. And probably within 3 years after that, I paid him all of his money back plus the interest and had over $1 million in the bank.
That's great, because now the reason I asked that, you mentioned 2008, mm-hmm. and the people who want to go online and they are worried to maybe changing their career or starting their business, they're like, no, with this crisis, nothing, we don't know what is going to happen. So what advice would you give them?
Well, I would first say that crisis creates opportunity. So, I mean, you know, with the coronavirus and COVID-19, I mean, there's a lot of things that, you know, that will prevent you from, you know, from doing some things, like starting a bar or a restaurant is probably not a very good idea right now. But if you look at your opportunities, you know, and as long as these opportunities come from a space of contribution, meaning I've seen so many entrepreneurs that have a get rich quick attitude. And I mean, I used to have that when I was a kid. I was like, I'm going to get rich super fast and I'll do whatever it takes to make money. But that type of money that you make off doing something that's get rich quick, it never sticks around. It will be gone within a couple of years. You want to look for doing good, right? You want to look at doing something that helps society. So, you know, I've run into a lot of companies, you know, that I work with that, you know, that started making, you know, face masks, sanitary face masks. And I worked with some companies that, you know, we supply sweeteners to that started making hand sanitizer. And so they were doing it from a space of contribution. But out of it, I was amazed to see that a lot of these companies did very, very well. Like financially, they were able to keep people at work. They were able to keep their companies going. So I would say always look for the opportunity. No matter what's going on, no matter what crisis is happening, there is always an opportunity. And always look for those opportunities that come from a space of contribution and doing good.
Thank you. But why do you do what you do, Tom?
That's a really good question. You know, I think understanding a person's why behind everything that they do is critical, because if you don't understand your why, you're not going to know where you're going. And my why, the reason I started my company, is to be able to do my part to help turn around metabolic disease. And so metabolic disease is a disease that's caused by, you know, eating too much sugar, eating too many carbohydrates, not exercising, you know, and the result of that is generally type 2 diabetes, which can be deadly. But on a bigger global level, you can see how type 2 diabetes can affect the entire health of a nation. Like when you look at the United States and you look at the percentage of the population, almost 40% of Americans are overweight and suffering from metabolic disease. And while, you know, that's a choice that they make to eat, you know, to eat foods that are high in sugar and high in starch, that's a choice they make, and the choice they make to drink beverages that are high in sugar, there's a long-term effect on a national level, meaning that if you have people that are 40% of them are suffering from some kind of a metabolic disease, and as they get older, You know, they're going to need assistance. They're going to need medications, you know, to keep them alive. And when you look at the tax that that puts on the economy and the tax that it puts on everybody in society, it's not really fair. And I'm not shaming people, you know, that suffer from metabolic disease. But what I am saying is that there's alternatives out there. And the why behind my business is to be able to help create products that can offset metabolic disease.
Let's put man aside. How do you know you are successful?
That's a really good question. And that depends on how you measure success. Like if you measure success by the amount of digits that you have in your bank account, I think you might be missing the mark. If you measure your success on how many lives you impact, I think that's a greater benchmark for if you're doing well and doing good. So when I go to trade shows and when I see food manufacturers that I work with, when I go to consumer trade shows and I see consumers that I have touched their lives, and when they come to me and tell me their stories, like, you know, when a consumer tells me their story about, I've lost 150 pounds and I feel amazing, I'm off my diabetes medication, something like that is far, far more rewarding to me than it is to, you know, see a big fat bank account. On the other side of the coin, with my manufacturers that I work with, when I can see a company that a guy starts in his garage, a person starts in his garage, and 3 years later, you know, he's making millions of dollars per month, but by doing good, meaning his product makes people's lives better. And as he grows his company, he's able to create jobs and offer these jobs to, you know, to people that are looking to, you know, for advancement. So that's how I measure my success.
But Tom, can anyone be an entrepreneur, or are some people more cut out for it than others?
You know, that's a really good question. You know, I ponder that a lot. And that's almost the question of nature or nurture. You know, are people naturally good and naturally gifted, or is it really the circumstances of their upbringing? I honestly think that it's somewhere in between. But, you know, when I look at the story of Oprah Winfrey, I think that story impacts me the most. I mean, she was 14 years old, you know, and was molested by a family friend, I think, and was pregnant at 14. And when you look at, you know, when you look at that as somebody's, you know, baseline where they're starting at 14 years old, but then when you look at how Oprah Winfrey, you know, changed her life, and now I think that she's the wealthiest person, you know, I think the wealthiest woman in the world, I think. Don't quote me on that, but I know that does exceptionally well. But you know what? Another thing to you, if you follow what she does and the things that she promotes, she's also doing good. So she does good in the world. So I don't know. I guess the answer to that would be, I think it's it is partly a product of just who you are, but I think it's more if you just decide to be more than what you are.
What is the best way that you have found to market your product?
The best way that I have found to market my product, and I have found this to be the case with many other companies that I work with, is social media. I think having a big social media presence and getting your products into the hands of influencers, you know, people that have a lot of followers on social media, I believe that that is the absolute best way and the biggest bang for your buck. It really costs you nothing except for product and engagement to reach these people. And I mean, with Instagram, you can have your online store set up to actually feed products right into Instagram, and you will see a direct result of engaging with influencers. So I would say definitely by far, social media wins.
What have you learned from business as a whole?
What have I learned from business as a whole? Balance. I've learned balance, and I've learned I've compassion and balance. And I mean, part of the balance that I've learned is the work-life balance, because, you know, there were times in my business that it's all I cared about. And it's all I did. It's all I focused on. And I didn't focus on myself. I didn't focus on my health. I didn't focus on my relationships. All I focused was on my business. And out of it, I started losing relationships. You know, my health started to deteriorate somewhat, both physically and mentally, because, you know, I found myself exhausted and found the balance to be able to take care of myself, and found that the more I took care of myself, the more my business was thriving. So, and I still do that every day. Like, I get up very early in the morning just so I can have 3 to 4 hours to myself doing what I call my hour of power, which includes working out, running, journaling, which I journal every single day, meditation, and just really excellent, you know, self-care. And I would say that's what I've learned the most.
In your businesses, do you have a mentor or a coach?
Occasionally, I'll engage coaches. I find that with business coaches, and maybe I just haven't found the right one, but I think that I found with business coaches that I end up sort of outsmarting them. So I use my family and my friends as sort of motivators and to help keep me on track. And also within my company, I do, you know, empower my employees to call me out on things, you know, and I'm also very transparent about my agenda and about the direction that I am taking the company. So I feel if I start getting off track, I'll bring in a coach. But by and large, I don't really use coaches. I just use, you know, people within my tribe.
What is the most valuable thing your tribe or your family has told you?
To not take myself so seriously. to laugh a little, to have fun, to, you know, to connect, to have deep connections with people and loving relationships.
Thank you for sharing.
Thank you.
What is one thing no one knows about you?
Oh, well, that's also an interesting question. And I would have to say that there's probably not anything that somebody doesn't know about me. Like, I'm pretty transparent about my life. So I would say that people that will hear me on podcasts or have read my book or, you know, follow me on social media, I would say that one thing that would probably surprise them a little bit is that I used to live in a trailer. And I just think people find that to be interesting because people have like a perception of me, you know, like, wow, you're running this company and you're, you know, you have all of this success and, you know, you never had to, you know, you've always been this way. And what's interesting is, yeah, I lived in a small trailer. I think in where you're from, they call them caravans. So I lived in a caravan for a long time and I liked it. I liked living in a caravan. I honestly would probably live in a caravan again if I could. It was a simpler lifestyle. So I would say that the things that people don't know about me is that I have a real unattachment, I guess I would say, to material things.
What really inspired you or motivated you to go and live in a caravan?
Well, I was broke. So I was broke, and it was when I was in college, and I lived in a house with six roommates, and then we inadvertently ended up getting a seventh roommate who was sleeping on our couch. And I don't even know how, just one day he showed up and there's somebody sleeping on our couch. And I asked who it was. And they're like, oh, this is Jed. He's going to stay here for a while. And I'm like, I don't know, Jed. So it just, the house became, more and more people started living in the house. And then another one of the roommates had his girlfriend move in. And she was, I would say, the best description of her would be a maniac. And I couldn't get any studying done. And I thought, I want to live by myself. Like, I don't want to live with a bunch of people, but I can't afford an apartment on my own. And I can't afford to buy a house or buy a condo. And I was flipping through the paper and I saw that there was this elderly woman, and she was trying to sell the mobile home that she was living in. And it just worked out. Like, I had the cash to buy this tiny little caravan and moved in it. And I had a place to live by myself that I could afford. It wasn't nice, but it didn't leak and it was warm. And it was a great place to live.
What did your parents say
about me living in
that you are living in the trailer, you're living in the caravan? What's happening?
My dad at that point, because like my relationship with my dad's always been a little interesting, and so he thought it was amusing. He's like, "See, you're never going to be anything. You're living in a caravan," and my mom, she refused to come by. Like, she says, I wasn't interested in seeing it. But yeah, I remember, you know, in college, if I had a date and I'm like, "Oh, you want to come over?" And then they would be like, "That's where you live." And I'm like, "Yeah, I live in a trailer." And they're like, "No, you can just take me home." But I don't know. I didn't really care, because it was a place where I could live, and it was inexpensive. And, you know, when I look back on it, it was super simple. It would take me 2 minutes to clean the place up. And instead of now, if I have to clean my house, it's like a 2 or 3 hour job. And so I don't know. I prefer the caravan over a house.
Well, at least now you don't need to clean it. You can get the cleaner in and you focus on your business. Wow. Thank you. Thank you for sharing. That's okay.
You're welcome. Yes.
Okay. What is the most valuable thing you have ever given away?
Wow. The most valuable thing I've ever given away. I would say ideas. So I'm a fifth generation entrepreneur, and I find myself to be sort of a creative person. And so the amount of ideas that come to me, like, "Oh, you know what? This would be a great idea to do this. This would be, you know, really, you know, this is a great idea too." And so I had all these ideas in this black book. So I'd write down an idea and put together a little miniature business plan. And then I found that I had more ideas of things to do and businesses to build. Like, I had more ideas than I had lifetime. And at that point, I just started giving those ideas away. Like, you know, if somebody came to me and said, "Hey, I want to start a business," and I'd be like, "Well, have you ever considered this? Here's a miniature business plan. Is this something that you'd be interested in?" And they would take it and run with it. So I would say that those are the most valuable things that I've ever given away, because I've seen people actually take those ideas and build, you know, multi-million dollar businesses out of them.
What was the biggest risk you have ever taken?
The biggest risk I've ever taken? Well, I would say when I was younger, the biggest risk that I've ever taken was jumping off of a cliff into a pool of water. I would say that is the biggest risk. I would say another risk that I took was scuba diving, you know, at 100 feet and allowing myself to run out of air. That was a big risk, not a smart risk. Those are like physical risks. I would say that the biggest risk that I've recently taken, like within the last week, is buying a $10 million office building during COVID-19 pandemic.
One, you want to kill yourself. Two, you'll be fine.
I think I'll be fine too. I think that there is some sort of a divine, divine overlooker who watches over me, and maybe it's my parents or my grandparents or my dog or something. But somebody seems to watch over me and kind of nudges me to land on my feet every time. So it does make me come from a space of fearlessness sometimes.
Once the COVID-19 finish and everything is back to normal, you'll be the one who's laughing all the way to the bank. So, yeah, let's wait and see. So don't be worried about it for now. Okay, let's talk about your business. Tell us more about it, Iconic Foods.
Well, Icon Foods was formerly called Staviva Ingredients. And so, as I mentioned, I started a brand called Staviva Brands, and we were a large importer of stevia and alternative sweeteners to retail stores. And then I took that consumer brand equity and parlayed it into building Icon Foods. And so at Icon Foods, we are a supplier of sweetening systems that are designed to make dramatic cuts in added sugars to foods, beverages, bars, and frozen dairy and frozen desserts. So, you know, we are probably the largest distributor of sugar-free chocolate chips in the U.S. We're starting to go abroad, and we are probably one of the largest distributors of clean label sweetening systems. I would say that we are probably the biggest distributor of clean label sweetening systems in the United States. So those are our products. But the way that we service our customers is by taking their products that have a lot of sugar, and they'll send them to us, and I will actually reformulate them to have no sugar at all. And that's really how we've been capturing a lot of our customer base, is through formulation.
Where can we find your products, and how can we connect with you?
Well, I would say for Icon Foods, you could just find me Tom King, THOMKING, on LinkedIn. So LinkedIn's a really good place to find me. If you want to look at what kind of science we have going on, you could go to iconfoods.com. If you want to know what my side hustle is, what I do on the side, feel free to go to guygoneketo.com, or pick me up on any of the socials at guygoneketo. And just DM me. I answer everybody's questions. I take time to go through emails. So, reach out.
So, Clan, there will be more from Tom in a moment. If you are listening on one of the many podcasting platforms rather than my website, and you are encouraged by Tom's journey, go to onlinesuccessjourney.com for a bonus portion of the interview. The Online Success Journey is a wonderful membership community built for people searching for the path to success. We are one big clan, and you can be part of this community for free. Once you have joined the clan, click on part two of Tom's journey or over 200 plus other journeys that are available, and learn how you can find the right path for your own online success journey. That's a wrap, clan. Remember, success is a journey. Patience and Tom.
This is not the end of the journey. We hope you've enjoyed listening to part one and want to be sure you know there is a second part to this and every journey podcast at onlinesuccessjourney.com. Filled with even more success tips, uplifting stories, and even a bit of fun, there are dozens of episodes only available to the members of the Online Success Journey clan. Check out the website and click on Join the Clan for more information. Patience would like to thank you for listening to this podcast, and she has a free audio gift for you at her website. Go to onlinesuccessjourney.com for instant access to this gift. Of course, you know that listening to the journeys of others helps each of us chart our own path, so make sure you're subscribed to be notified as each new interview is posted. There are so many ways to stay connected to the Online Success Journey and to listen in. And if you're enjoying the podcast, we appreciate your help in telling others. One of the best ways to share the benefit you get is to rate and review it at Stitcher and other sites by clicking the stars or completing the ratings form, by clicking thumbs up and leaving a comment on YouTube, or liking and sharing the podcast on social media. To review the podcast within iTunes, simply open iTunes to the podcast, click on Ratings and Reviews, then write a review. On behalf of Patience, and until next time, thanks once more for listening. It is our hope that this podcast will guide you on your own online success journey.